Hello friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. I'm Campbell, and welcome to day two of this month's Newsworthy Clips articles. Now, our articles this month are focused more on technology and how they are changing our lives. Today we are talking about computers and how they may be taking over our jobs. This is going to be very interesting. But before we get into our article, let's once again introduce our panelists for this article. How are you doing today, Albert?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back. And yeah, I'm ready to find out, you know, if computers are going to be taking over our jobs.
Now, yesterday we talked about Facebook. Have you used Facebook today?
I have.
It's kind of hard not to. But, you know, we're trying to control that. We don't want to be Facebook junkies, right? Now, there's someone who is obviously not a Facebook junkie in the studio with us. How are you doing today, Linda?
Good, thank you. At least I try not to be a Facebook junkie, but it does kind of suck you in sometimes.
It does, because you just want to know what's going on in the world and with your friends and with your family.
Right, or you might, you know, I just want to look something up, look up a person or contact someone through Facebook. Maybe that's the only method. And then I just start, you know, 2 hours later, you know.
I don't know what happened.
I still haven't contacted that person, but, you know, I found out a lot of other information, sometimes useless information.
Yes, very, very, very true. All right, so obviously technology has changed our lives, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. Technology is a very big part of today's modern society. Most people have a computer in their homes. Most people have computers in their offices, and most people walk around with their computers in their hand with their smartphones, right? Mm-hmm. So computers are a big part of our lives, and scientists and tech and engineers are working to make computers even more intelligent, and they're able to do even more now. So I started the program asking, are computers taking over the world? Well, that is a very important question to think about. So let's listen to today's article and see what we're talking about for today.
Are computers creative? According to a 2013 study by the Oxford Martin School, 47% of U.S. jobs are susceptible to takeover by machines in the coming decades. In any number of industries, chances are that your occupation is in the middle of an unprecedented algorithm-driven paradigm shift. One area we tend to view as safe from automation is creativity, but perhaps even artists will soon have to compete with computers. A growing number of computer scientists believe we should focus on what they term the Lovelace test, a variation in which a computer is asked to prove its intelligence by coming up with a spontaneous creative idea, one its creator does not program.
So computers and technology have made our lives more convenient, right? And it's definitely allowed us to do a lot of things that maybe we weren't able to do in the past. But the flip side of that is that a lot of people are losing their jobs, right, because of the new technology.
Exactly. And that's kind of a scary thought, you know, being a computer takeover, or even the statistic that they present here, that 40% of U.S. jobs are susceptible to takeover by machines in the coming decades. And the word susceptible just means easily influenced or affected by something. And usually susceptible is used in a negative context.
Right.
I'd say someone is susceptible to a particular sickness, that they're at risk, or they're more sensitive to catching this disease.
Right. So children and elderly are more susceptible to colds, right, because their immune systems are not as strong. Okay, so 47% of U.S. jobs, but I'm sure it's not just U.S. jobs, it's globally, these jobs are susceptible. That means that they are at risk for takeover by machines in the coming decades. And we've already seen a lot of examples of that, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, at the supermarket, the checkout counter, mm-hmm. right? And they have the self-checkout now,
exactly.
right? So you used to have a clerk at the counter to check you out, but now they have the machine that can do it for you, and you can just do it yourself.
Right. Exactly. I'm very conflicted about this, actually, because I feel like, no offense to anyone who does, like, register work, mm-hmm. checkout work. I used to do that myself as well. But I don't know if it's something it's a very fulfilling job.
Right.
I feel like if someone could do something else instead of checking out people, mm-hmm. Or ringing them up and letting them pay their bill, right. I think, you know, they would choose otherwise.
Right.
You know, I think it has happened time and time again in history where, like, oh, we have printers now.
Right.
Or we have washing machines. So mm-hmm. instead of people who are actually, you know, handwriting each copy or copying mm-hmm. the books or mm-hmm. washing the dishes, right?
Right.
Machines and computers have been making things more convenient for us and automating right. things.
Sure.
So is it something that's good? Is it people are losing jobs? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better as a whole? I want to say yes, but I don't know if I can look someone in the eye and say, like, hey, you lost your job, but it's better for humanity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that as technology and machines become more advanced, that more and more jobs are going to be replaced. And in a way, it does make our lives easier and faster and more convenient. And, you know, I just think of the toll booths, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in the past, people needed to stand at the booths and collect the money. But now we have the different passes that, you know, as we just drive through, it'll do the sensor, you know. And even banks, right? And, you know, we have the online banking now. Mm-hmm. So people don't need to go to banks, and a lot of bank clerks are losing their jobs, right?
Right, right.
So there's plenty of examples of this, and it's already happening, but what we're finding out is that it's going to happen even more in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And any number of industries, and we've already mentioned a few industries, chances are that your occupation is in the middle of an unprecedented algorithm-driven paradigm shift. All right, there's a lot of words there. Let's break it down. Okay, unprecedented. What does that mean, unprecedented?
So that's something that's never been done before. There's no previous example in history mm-hmm. of this.
Right, so it's an unprecedented, it's something new that's happening. All right, algorithm-driven. So we've got two words there. First, what is an algorithm?
Well, algorithm, just think of like a math class when you had geometry, you had like certain formulas mm-hmm. or sets to be able to approach or solve a problem. And for in computer terms, an algorithm is usually something that automates something. So if a computer is given a task like A, then it will automatically be able to arrive to task B.
That's right.
So there's a lot of automation happening with algorithms.
Yeah, so an algorithm is a set of steps to accomplish a task. We all use algorithms from day to day. We don't call them algorithms, but, you know, for example, if I ask you to make me an omelet, you know, your first step is to get an egg. Your second step is to crack it, you know, and then you want to fry the egg, and et cetera, et cetera. These steps, right? So computers and technology use these instructions and steps, algorithms, to get things done. So algorithm-driven just means that, you know, that our world is now so focused and controlled by these algorithms, and is creating this paradigm shift, right? Now, what is a paradigm shift?
And that's a change in beliefs, ideas, or methods. It's a change in the standard that you're using.
Right. And just as an example, you know, we have a lot of new ways of doing business now. For example, Uber, right? Uber is the world's largest taxi service. But what's interesting is they don't own any vehicles, right? These vehicles are all driven by, you know, not volunteers, but people, they drive their own cars,
right?
And so it used to be that if you're going to do a taxi service, you're going to need to have taxis. Another example is Airbnb, mm-hmm. right? They are the world's largest provider of accommodations, but they don't own any property.
Right.
So in the past, if you were going to be in the travel business, in the hotel business, you needed to own property. Now you don't.
Yeah.
So this is an example of the paradigm shift that's happening, right? So in the past, people used to use people, hire people to get things done. The new shift is now moving towards buying machinery and technology to get things done.
Mm-hmm. Allowing computers to do the work.
Right. So this paradigm shift is causing jobs to be more susceptible to takeover by machines. Now, one area that is usually viewed as safe is what?
Creativity.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of that as very more for humans, right? That
right.
computers are incapable of being creative, or at least at the level that human beings are.
Right. So in the past, I mean, we were talking about algorithms, right?
Right.
So computers and technology, they're bound by the algorithms.
Right.
They're bound by their programming. They have to follow A, B, C, D, E. And so they're not able to deviate from that. And if you're going to be creative, as humans are, you need to be able to take in the information and make snap decisions and then, you know, shift based on that. But in the past, computers weren't able to do that. So this area of creativity has usually traditionally been viewed as safe from automation, which just means you being done by machines or technology. But now we're finding that even artists will soon have to compete with computers. What do you think about that?
It's such a scary thought, because before going to the article, I would be like, oh, you know, I'm going to welcome with, like, open arms that, you know, computers are integrated into our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that now they can compete with us on a creativity level,
Yeah.
Or even the thought of humans being replaced altogether,
right?
If artificial intelligence can, you know, achieve this level, then yeah, there's no telling what else
right.
can be
Sounds
achieved.
Like science fiction, right? there's plenty of movies about how
yeah.
computers and robots
right.
take over the world and start, you know, wreaking havoc because they start thinking intelligently.
Right.
Right. And will that happen? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little wary of artificial intelligence. There's reason to be. There is rational reasons why
right.
we should be
right.
wary of artificial
yeah.
intelligence, or just the development of it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think of the whole Terminator series, right? I mean, that's the whole idea, right? The computers take over the world
yeah.
and, you know, start, you know, killing humans left
right.
and right. But, you know, that's not really what we're talking about today. We're talking about just how computers are starting to be more creative. And a growing number of computer scientists believe we should focus on what they term the Lovelace test. And what is that? What's the description of the Lovelace test that we have here?
Well, it was a test designed to test how intelligent artificial intelligence was, because creativity is an indicator of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So this tested whether or not a computer could prove its intelligence by coming up with a spontaneous creative idea.
Mm.
And that word spontaneous just means something that is unplanned, that happens naturally or
right.
on the spot.
Right. As we were saying earlier, just, you know, we as humans we're able to respond. Different things unexpectedly happen and we're able to respond and make decisions. And, for the most part, up to now, computers are bound by their programming. You know, they're only able to do what they're programmed to do.
Exactly. And another, factor in this test was that, because it was supposed to be spontaneous, they shouldn't be able to explain how the idea came about.
Right.
But usually, you know, if you're programming something, like, the programmer will be able to determine how that idea was reached.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, we have an example of this a little bit, you know, with our phones nowadays. A lot of people with Apple phones use the Siri, or other smartphones have the voice activated, right? And they'll respond to you. But even those phones are limited. Sometimes I'll speak to my phone and they're like, I do not understand what you're mm-hmm. saying, you know? But one day, perhaps, the phone will understand everything I'm saying, and that is an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's already technology out there that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to, a level that a human can.
Right.
But
yet.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we do have some examples of current creative machines. Let's see what these machines are doing.
Current creative machines. Recently, I ate my first meal from a recipe prepared by an artificial intelligence program, IBM's Watson, a machine capable of carrying out creative tasks. Chef Watson can assemble new recipes, not only by analyzing ingredients as a human chef would, but also by fusing flavors on a chemical level to find pairings that have rarely, if ever, existed before. In South London, a company called Epigogics is fine-tuning a vast artificial brain that can help Hollywood predict hit movies by analyzing scripts using thousands of metrics. It can also advise how to tweak a script to make the film more profitable. Other tech researchers are similarly using algorithms to write novels and generate music. Creative machines can and will enrich human life. Computers have been used for years to help design drugs. Now, robot scientists are coming up with new hypotheses and testing them. In engineering, computers that mimic evolutionary processes, called genetic algorithms, can come up with patentable concepts that seem counterintuitive, but work better than many of the designs created by human engineers. As is always the case with technology, we need to find a way to take the positives while minimizing the negatives.
Well, we see several examples of creative machines at work. First, we talk about a meal that was prepared by, in essence, a computer. Let's talk about that.
There are machines out there that can, quote-unquote, print out food by having, like, certain base chemicals in its ink reservoir. And so IBM Watson is a chef now. Chef Watson can make new creative dishes.
So how does Chef Watson work?
Well, Chef Watson creates new recipes by not only analyzing ingredients as a human chef would, but also by fusing flavors on a chemical level. And so it's taking an analytical approach or a scientific approach to cooking food or to creating recipes. And it's opposed to a human chef who would be using his senses, like his taste, his sense of taste, smell or sight, to create flavors. But I think if they come out with equally satisfying results, then both ways are equally good.
Right. I wonder about that, though. You know, because, I mean, okay, yeah, like you were saying, cooking and culinary, it is a science, right? So there are certain foods that taste better with certain other foods, and chefs, you know, seasoned chefs know that, so they know what goes well together, so they're able to put that together. But I do wonder, I mean, are computers able to, you know, lay out the food on a plate the way a human would? Because I feel like that is part of the whole experience as well.
I feel like a computer would have, I don't know about plating, but it would have an advantage in terms of knowledge and information. It's, you know, a human chef is limited by the amount of time he or she would spend in school or studying, right? And then you can just upload all this, like, different kind of recipes to a computer. And I just, like a little tangent, like the other day I walked out of the office and my phone buzzed and I looked down and it said, "Hey, are you going home? If yes, there's going to be traffic and this is the ETA." Imagine, you know, when you get home, your smartphone's able to know what you feel like. You know, like, oh, maybe he wants curry tonight. Would that be amazing?
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool. And I mean, that's like the whole Star Trek thing, right? You know, the food generator. I mean, yeah. But I just wonder, like, how would that work, you know? Because, I mean, part of eating is the whole visual. I mean, you can eat an apple pie, but if the apple pie doesn't look like apple pie, it just looks like a pile of mush. It still tastes like apple pie, but, you know, that visual part of the eating is kind of gone. I don't know.
Right. No, that's true. That's a very good point.
Right, so I think these, well, this technology or this program still needs to be tested by humans, or it can be, you know, it can be incorporated in, you know, a chef's right. repertoire, you know, to enhance,
right.
his work or make it better.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's part of the creative process too, right? If, you know, they're able to figure out how to teach a computer to plate, that would be cool.
I really like what Linda, like, she made a really good point that, you know, it doesn't really have to come down to us versus them. You know, computers can help people. We can work alongside them.
Right. Yes.
Right. Because, okay. Well, Albert mentioned before, a chef only has a certain amount of time to try different recipes.
Sure.
So if this program can come up with the best, you know, fusion or the best recipe that the chef can try, then that would limit the amount of time that's spent on trial and error.
Yeah, and I'm sure it could limit human error as well, mm-hmm. you know, and so in the kitchen it could be a little bit more efficient. Perhaps one day we'll go to a restaurant that's completely run by computers.
Can we talk about outside of the kitchen where, like, you mentioned off air that this feels like cheating in Hollywood?
Yes. This is really interesting. So there's a company in South London called Epagogics. And what are they doing?
They are fine-tuning a vast artificial brain that can help Hollywood predict hit movies by analyzing scripts using thousands of metrics. And when we say thousands of metrics, we're talking about different factors or ways to measure something.
Right.
And, yeah, it does just feel like cheating, right? I understand that this is what Hollywood or any TV show or even song production companies where, you know, they look for beats that appeal to the mass audience mm-hmm. or formulas in terms of, like, oh, explosions, actions,
right.
summer's great for these things and stuff like that. They really do this, but now they're using basically an artificial brain.
Yeah. But in a way, though, this is still not really being creative, you know, because the scripts are still being written by humans.
Right.
Right? And then they're just being analyzed, which is mm-hmm. still very scientific. And they're right. using metrics and, you know, algorithms to analyze the scripts. So in a way, like, if, let's say, the computer was actually writing out the scripts,
mm-hmm.
you know, then maybe perhaps that would be interesting. Yes.
But I feel like, yeah, like earlier you mentioned about plating, right? Which
right.
is like visually, it's something that it would vary from chef to chef in terms of like pouring their passion or soul into.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with script writing, if all the computer is doing is trying to make a script that's a hit,
right.
we might lose movies that have like the personal side or what we
right.
call indie
right.
movies.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the whole idea of, you know, the entertainment industry, right? It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
People want to make money.
Exactly.
Right? And it can also, so this artificial brain can also advise how to tweak a script to make the film more profitable. So what parts of the script might need to be more exciting, or how can we rework the story so
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it will... more people will like it.
Right. Or even parts that need to be removed.
Right. right
that wouldn't be interesting. Just
right.
to make it better.
Yeah.
Or more profitable. That's the Hollywood bottom line.
That's right.
What's going to make more money?
That's right. And other tech researchers are similarly using algorithms to write novels and generate music. So this is the part that I felt like was cheating. Because, you know, the whole point is that people work hard, you know, to hone their craft and to make it happen, and now they're using machines to do it? I don't know. It's not fair. It doesn't seem fair to me.
Until you buy that software and you crank out that novel or music.
Right. I mean, but I feel like part of the artistic process is that struggle of, like, looking for that inspiration, right?
Right. Or using your experiences
right.
to create a song. Or
making it more personal,
mm-hmm.
right? And now you're using machines. I don't know. All right. Well, the next paragraph tells us that creative machines can and will enrich human life. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's possible. Well, we can use it in conjunction or to collaborate on certain projects, just like we see the recipe generating program that can help chefs, mm-hmm. or to use it to make scripts better or make things more interesting. I think it can. I don't know. It's maybe enrich is a strong word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the truth is computers have enriched our lives, right? And
well,
they have made lives easier and
more convenient.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we do see in our article that computers have been used for years to help design new medicine, right? And now robot scientists are coming up with new hypotheses and testing them. So, you know, computers are helping us solve a lot of problems. So, it's really interesting to see and to figure out what computers will be doing in the future, right? And we see here that in engineering, computers have been mimicking the evolutionary process, right? And they've been coming up with new patentable concepts that seem against intuition, but they work better than many of the designs created by human engineers.
Right. I think that's where computers or artificial intelligence can come in very handy because they'll come up with ways or ideas that we humans wouldn't think of because it seems counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. It seems like it wouldn't work, mm-hmm. right? But it actually works better.
Mm-hmm.
So giving us alternatives that we wouldn't think of on our own.
And one such example of such an alternative is, I remember reading the other week about how scientists are pushing out materials where they make it so, like, on the top surface, it's like the skin of a shark, and bacteria isn't able to attach itself. So, you know, they put it in hospitals, and everything will be sterile by itself. So these alternatives are important.
That's right. So there are a lot of positives, and as we end our article, it says we need to find a way to take the positives while minimizing the negatives. All right. As always, we'd love to hear what you thought about today's article. What do you think about computers and their place in our world? Please do write to us at letters@studioclassroom.com, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Take care, everyone.